And welcome to this, the July 19th, 2009 edition, Ford Forum. John Quinlan here. And I've got a fascinating discussion ahead in the next hour. We're going to be talking with two representatives of groups that work with young people, seeking to empower them and develop local leadership. And it should be an interesting discussion. I think the dilemma with groups and this important work is sometimes, you know, to find a way to do the work in a way that really allows young people to lead, really allows them to have a voice, and, you know, to also connect up with the wisdom of past generations and some of the stuff that's been learned along the way, but also to keep the way clear for new ways of doing things, new ways of looking at things, and drawing on the strength that youth bring to those processes. And here in studio, we have two guests to help us with that discussion. And one is Natalia Thompson. Natalia has recently graduated from West High School, and she is Yale-bound. But she's representing a group that she helped establish back in 2007 called Madison SOS for Speak Out Sisters. Am I remembering that right?
Speak Out Sister.
Speak Out Sister. And Natalia has a wide range of community involvements and lots of things to tell you about that we'll tell you more about over the hour. Most recently, she was the recipient of a national ACLU Youth Activist Scholarship Award, and Stacey Harbaugh from the ACLU, one of our good friends, writes that Natalia has engaged not only in the ACLU of Wisconsin, but also grassroots organizations around the city, community leaders, legislators, and high school students have been part of her work. Because she got the ACLU of Wisconsin involved in her efforts, they now have a fantastic youth activism workshop that they've shared with other youth organizations all around the state. So, Natalia, it's really great to have you back here.
Thanks so much.
And you were here, I think, last fall, I think,
yes.
with Arlene Silvera, Lucy Matayak from the school board. We were talking about why students had a great investment in terms of the referendum that was about to come. Is that right?
Yes.
I remember that right. And then, again, also Amy Munlock, who I think this is probably your fourth or fifth appearance on the show. We were trying to remember his last year or year before.
It's been a while, but it's really good to be back.
And it's good to have you here. And we've just had some fascinating discussions, some of the panels I think you've been a part of, on the nature of community organizing, how to do it well. I think in other contexts, too, we've also talked about how do you bring in voices that haven't traditionally been heard? I remember one of our friends, Mario Sierra Garcia, I think, mm-hmm. was sitting in the chair over there and just talking about sometimes, you know, the activists have been around here for ages, and I call myself as one of them. We've just got to shut up sometimes and listen. And I think probably in the realm of working with youth, that's something that that you can empathize with. And to introduce you properly, Amy Munlock is the executive director of the Grassroots Leadership College. Involved in a variety of community organizing efforts over the years. And welcome to Ford Forum. I want to start with you, though. What are your reflections on? How do you walk that line? How do you provide a supportive framework and yet also allow people to have their own voice?
Sure. Well, the Grassroots Leadership College really works with a wide age range of people and a really diverse group of people in many different ways. And I think the way that we're able to do that successfully is through that idea that we're all learners, teachers, and leaders. And that means for us that whoever is coming into the room is coming into the room with a life experience. It may not be as long of a life experience as someone else in the room, but it's equally important. And they bring things from that life experience that they can share with the group. And it's through that sharing that we really learn from each other. So that's really the essence of it, is recognizing and honoring that each person there has had experiences in their lives that have given them some skills and have given them some ways of looking at the world.
I'm trying to remember that phrase. Maybe you've alluded to this already, but on your website, it's like three concise two-word sentences.
Yeah, it's simply everyone a learner, everyone a teacher, everyone a leader.
Yeah, no, that seems to say it all. Mm-hmm. Amy, why don't we at the outset just mention a couple of things that are upcoming with your organization. One is that part of your ongoing process, you're recruiting adult mentors for folks. Is that right?
We are. We are right now recruiting developing leaders and coaches for our general semester. Our general semester is a four-month-long program that works with people of all ages, learning basic community leadership skills. They're learning things like how to fundraise, to cross-cultural organizing, conflict transformation, running meetings, all the basics of community organizing. And while they're doing that, they're taking on a project in the community, and they're having a coach who's working one-on-one with them throughout the entire semester to make that project successful. That might be a brand new project, or it might be something that they've been working on for a while. We've been had the honor to support over 100 different projects in the community now. We've helped with the revitalization of a dozen different neighborhood associations. One of our developing leaders was a key force in bringing Pierce's grocery store to the north side. Another helped start Nuestro Mundo Community School. All sorts of different projects just being led by regular folks who are getting the support that they need and just simply kind of letting them know it's okay that they are a leader and that is a good thing and they can do it.
Well, I'd love to hear some more details on some of the success stories that you mentioned as the hour goes on. One other thing that's happening, I know you have a very interesting world record-setting potentially special event coming up in September.
We do. Thanks to one of our faculty, Boris Frank, we were able to connect with the Mazomani Regional Heritage Center and are now going to be hosting the Hula Hoopla 2009 on September 13th from 11 to 4 out in downtown Mazomani. And we're going to be taking buses from Madison and having hooping teams. And we'll also be having the world's largest hula hoop hooped by a single individual. So people keep asking me how big that hoop is. And we're not letting that word out too far yet, simply because if we say how big the hoop is, somebody else is going to try to break that record. If you want to see the big hoop, you got to be there.
Given this is in Mazo, do you have to file an environmental impact statement with the Eagles nearby and all that? I mean, is this thing going to really create a...
It's going to be huge.
It's going to be huge.
Okay. We're going to try to keep it out of the Eagles' pathways, but it'll be huge. And like I said, there's going to be buses going from Madison, and folks can simply go to the website for the event. It's firstgiving.com/hulahoopla2009.
All right. Well, Natalia Thompson, come back to you and some of the important work you're doing. Again, as we mentioned at the outset, this organization, Madison SOS, Speak Out Sister, founded back in 1977 when you were a sophomore at West.
2007.
What did I say, 1997? Okay. Yeah, you haven't had that long of a high school career, sorry.
No, fortunately.
Okay, good. So back in 2007, what could you tell us a little bit more about the organization? And I know you have an important project that you want to get the word out about this summer.
Yeah, I founded Madison SOS with much the same vision as the Grassroots Leadership College has, which is that regular people in the community, especially youth, especially young women in our case, have the experience and insights to be leaders on issues affecting their lives. So over the past 2 years, Madison SOS has worked to bring together young women from across the city to look at the issues affecting their lives, to talk about their visions for the future of their community on those issues, to learn how they can make a difference on those issues, and to really become leaders in the community. So we really emphasize with our work the idea that young women have the right to be involved in community decision-making processes that affect their lives. And so we really have this philosophy that even though young women are youth, they still have a right to be heard on different issues. And just because of their life experiences, they sort of are experts on those issues. And we're all about having them be a part of community leadership.
Well, it would seem like a no-brainer, but it seems like a particular emphasis is trying to get young girls, get girls' input on programs that are run for teenage girls.
Exactly.
I guess it's intuitive, but why is that important?
Well, what we see, and part of why I founded Madison SOS, was that I was sort of surprised to find that there are so many really well-intentioned, some very successful community efforts to affect change on different issues affecting youth in the community. But there are very, very few that really ask youth what they want in terms of decisions like policies and laws, and also in terms of programs or policies within their schools. And so what we really see as being extremely important is that young women are at the decision-making table before adults make decisions that affect their lives. So,
well, that makes a lot of sense. In case you're just joining us, again, this is Forward Forum. John Quinlan here. And the discussion for the remainder of the hour is talking about, in this case, two really valuable programs that empower youth, young people. We're talking about people from high school age and perhaps a bit beyond, try to create an environment where their leadership potential is realized. And as we pointed out going into this discussion, this is sometimes easier said than done because, as Natalia, I think, was just remarking, there are a lot of very well-intentioned programs, perhaps, but programs that go with sort of a pre-existing scheme or something that might be appropriate for people from older generations, stuff that's worked before. But it's sometimes hard for folks who've been doing the hard work over the years to open up to new ideas and to new leaders. And that's the challenge here. And we want to put that out to you, too. Have you or a young person that's in your life, have they been involved in groups like this? And this might also be a group like the Girl Scouts, Natalia, I know, where you've had a lot of experience, or other groups that are school-based out in the community. What are some examples that you can give us of groups that successfully walk that line and truly do, I know it's an overused word perhaps, but do empower rather than kind of try from top down to put a certain framework on what the activities are of young people. And also, again, especially when those programs are designed to increase the quality of life for young people, how do you make sure that it's young people that are calling the shots, that are designing those programs with their best interest in mind? Give us a call. 321-1670 is the local number, *123. U.S. cellular phone users, toll free, or if you're calling from further afield, and hopefully maybe some of our national listeners picked up on Facebook today and are tuning in, that's 1-877-867-1670. Just also what I mentioned before we go into further into the program, too, again, John Quinlan here, and my co-host Stephanie Woods is off for rest of the month of July and part of August, and she is embarking on a really important project, and that is the Act 7 AIDS Ride. And we hope that some of you who are regular listeners might be able to support Stephanie. Just go to our blog, and the simplest way to find that is go to forwardforum.net and follow the main large lead there to the blog. And then you'll find on that page direct links and more information about Stephanie's ride. And we've been talking about that in past weeks. We'll continue that as she comes up on that. I believe that's starting about August 6th. But again, back to business at hand. Our guests in studio are Natalia Thompson. She's with Madison SOS, Speak Out Sister, an organization that works with high school age girls to develop leadership and other skills, and also Amy Munlock, who's with us from the Grassroots Leadership College. That's an organization that also works with young people, but people from all different walks of life trying to develop community leadership skills. Amy, just want to come back to maybe to one specific story as we go further into this that kind of caught my ear as you were talking about it. I don't know if folks are familiar with this story, but the Northside grocery store maybe is a great case in point about how, groups of individuals really can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what happened on the north side, and this was, I think, about 7 or 8 years ago or so, that Roundy's grocery store closed, and they were left without a grocery store, and people on the north side who had limited access to transportation were really, really at a loss, unable to get food. So the Northside Planning Council stepped up, and one of their folks involved with the Northside Planning Council, Nan, became one of our developing leaders. And through the process of being a developing leader, she started to take the lead in coordinating a market basket survey. That market basket survey was taken across the North Side, and it was found out that the North Side definitely was what was considered a food desert, that people didn't have adequate access to basic food items. So they took that survey to the mayor's office and said to Mayor Cheslevich, look at this. This is a problem. We need to fix this. Mm. And really got the mayor on their side, and that they took the fight and led to not only getting a grocery store on the north side, but getting a locally owned grocery store. Pierce's is a small business, basically, and got them there. Were able to engage Northside residents in determining what they wanted their grocery store to look like and to be like. If you ever go into Pierce's, you'll see that there's Wi-Fi area where you can sit and work on your computer then or read or whatever. There's kind of community space. There's a fireplace there. There's good quality food. There's all these things. And that was all because of Northside residents really getting up in arms and saying, hey, we live here. This is our community. We need to have these services. And not only just being angry about it, but figuring out the skills that they needed to be able to create change. And they took it into their own hands to create what they wanted in their neighborhood. And I think that's what we do with the Grassroots Leadership College. And I think that's pretty similar to what Madison SOS does, is we figure out what's the problem. We are angry about it, and we figure out how to use that anger and how to focus it. What skills do we need? What do we need to be able to do? Saul Alinsky would have referred to it as cold anger. Saul Alinsky, the father of community organizing. And that's really what it is, because you see a lot of folks who are angry and will shout about things or will send that letter into the newspaper or blog on the newspaper page or whatever. But that's nice. That helps your spirit maybe, but it doesn't really create change. So what we do is we take that anger and give it some skills around it, give it some focus, and help folks figure out how to use it.
As you know, we both are involved in an organization called the Northside Planning Council, which had a role in that, in the grocery store. And I think you both sent a lot of activists their way. And, you know, anyway, they work closely with some of the work that you do. But I had a chance during their 15th anniversary last fall to produce a documentary about their work. And I think the thing that impressed me among the people that we interviewed was that, you know, by and large, most of the folks really hadn't done anything that required them to go into an office and ask for money, or that really required them to call around and do all these other things. And it was pretty intimidating and pretty scary. So let's, on a very personal basis, if you could maybe just walk us through. You said somebody comes in that position, and as I think Char Tortorese was explaining, you know, she says, you know, we not only, you know, he hadn't asked. It was really something to ask for $25, let alone $25,000. They were talking about raising money for the local library. How do you get somebody to that point where they have the confidence in themselves and in the work that they're doing that gets them to the point where they can do this kind of thing?
It's really striking to me how much just letting someone know that they're a leader really does, how much that changes things for them. The other thing that we do besides letting folks know, yes, you are a leader, you can fill that role, we have a talented group of volunteer faculty who are working with them closely each week that they're in the class or in class for 4 months, and taking them through different content area, how to fundraise, how to run a meeting, how to see yourself as a leader, what's the importance of your personal values in this scenario. And we have very interactive classes in which participants are leading the way. They're sharing their own stories. They're figuring things out from their own lives. And then we have a coach who works with them, goes to class with them, operates alongside them as an equal, and asks them lots of questions and helps them think through the project that they're working on. And then there's me, and there's the rest of our volunteer folks who are working around that are there to help them, are there to help process things through whenever there's a challenge. It's striking to me the things that happen in the classroom. I've been thinking recently about some of the folks in our very first class session back in 2003 who about a year or so after the class was over came back to me and told me how they had left their abusive partners because of the Grassroots Leadership College. Because they were in a space in which they were told that they were important and that they were leaders and that they deserved to be treated with respect. And that gave them the strength that they needed to change things in their personal lives.
You're alluding to this, but again, with the Northside Planning Council, the thing that struck me as we had these panels of six or seven people together is the energy that people gave each other, that it just it built exponentially, that one person's confidence, one person's belief really infected someone else.
Yeah, it really does. I think one of the challenges that we have in our society today is that we are not encouraged to be part of a community. And groups like the Northside Planning Council and the other planning councils and the Grassroots Leadership College and SOS, we are all organizations that say, you know what? We need to sit down and talk to each other. We need to hear each other. We need to care about each other. And when people are given those very simple things, they just grow so much and change so much. In our classroom, we will have folks who are homeless. We'll have folks who are coming out of prison. We will have folks who are UW faculty. We will have everyone in between. So people are getting a chance to just talk to people who they don't normally get a chance to talk to. And they get to see them as fellow human beings, not as some sort of statistic somewhere or some news story somewhere, but to actually see them as fellow human beings. And it changes the way we operate.
All right. We're up against a break, and when we come back to tell you, I want to hear more about the work that you're doing, and specifically a question that maybe some of our listeners have an answer to. Can you think back to the time when you were a teenage girl, a young woman, some of the special challenges, obstacles that you might have faced, some of the strengths that you were able to bring to that experience, and help us as we reflect on some of the things that are happening to young people in the here and now? And I'll get a chance for you to answer variations on that in just a minute. But before we go to the break, wanted to make sure that we talked about the survey that you're doing again and how people can participate.
Yeah. One of the things that we're trying to do right now is to ask girls to share their stories, their opinions, their experiences on several different local social justice issues affecting their lives. And we've been doing that sort of in an organic way in the community through different like community roundtables for almost 2 years. But right now we're doing a sort of a more formal online survey. It's called Speak Out, a survey on the issues affecting your life for Madison High School teen girls. And we would love girls to go to the survey, which is online at tinyurl.com/SOS-survey, to take the survey and tell us what they think. So.
All right. And that link is also something that you can find on the Forward Forum blog. You can either find that through forwardforum.net or just Google Forward Forum Exchange blog, which is where you can find it. It's about halfway down in bright red, the Speak Out survey. Chance to link to that. And are there any geographical limitations, or what? Who would you like to answer the survey?
Yeah, we are looking for girls who attended a Madison High School in the last school year, 08-09, and girls who just graduated in June are eligible to take it. So Madison teen girls ages 14 to 19.
Okay. Again, John Quinlan here with Forward Forum, talking about programs that that help develop leadership among young people in our community. Back in just a moment. And welcome back to Forward Forum. John Quinlan here. Again, Stephanie Woods is off training this afternoon, out on the trail, working, getting ready for that X7 AIDS ride, which is coming up beginning, I believe, August 6th. But you can find out more about all of that on our blog, forwardforumexchange.blogspot.com, as well as links to many of the topics we're talking about today. Again, our overall topic is discussing young community leaders and how their leadership is fostered here in Madison. And actually not just young community leaders in the case of one of our organizations, but folks that perhaps had never really thought of performing a leadership role or getting out there and helping organize a grocery store or supporting their local library or becoming politically involved in homeless issues or other such things. And just a fascinating discussion. Again, we're speaking with Amy Mundlach, and she's the executive director of the Grassroots Leadership College. Also, Natalia Thompson, and she is the coordinator of a project called Madison SOS Speak Out Sister, something she founded back in 2007, not 1997, 2007. 2007 when she was a sophomore in high school. And Natalia is a graduating senior who is Yale bound. She's, among other things, a recipient of a national ACLU scholarship and many other recognitions and distinctions. Someone who kind of epitomizes in a lot of ways what the potential is of a program like this. And hey, with that in mind, Natalia, as we come back in, you know, some of this is maybe truisms and stereotypes and other things, but as we discuss things that happen sometimes with girls as they go through grade school into junior high or middle school and high school, there's this notion that at some point there's a threshold reached where they suddenly are not necessarily excelling academically, not necessarily feeling like they can embrace leadership. That there's something about the way our society is put together, or maybe the way these institutions are put together, that disempowers rather than empowering girls. Is that something that's still real and something that maybe a group like yours needs to get at?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a big issue. Nationwide, it's definitely a trend that girls lose confidence and their self-esteem drops throughout the middle school years. And so by the time they get to high school, they don't necessarily see themselves as leaders at all, even if they did earlier on in their life. But one of the main things that we think is responsible for that is the fact that girls and young women and so many other different communities here in Madison and beyond are not told on a regular basis or even at all that their opinions matter, that they have the power to affect change, that they can make a difference. And so part of why I founded Madison SOS was just because I was so tired of hearing so many girls express very honest concerns about different issues affecting their lives and very real interests in taking action, but were so frustrated that they were hardly ever given opportunities to do so, to make a difference, and felt really strongly that they didn't have the ability to do that. So that's a big part of why we're around.
Well, we'll come back in just a second to again, some of the ways that you make that mm-hmm. that real, but just out of curiosity in your own life, are there people or circumstances, things that have motivated you to get involved?
You know, I think one of the big motivators has been seeing how many really wonderful grassroots community leaders in Madison of a wide variety of backgrounds are doing wonderful work. And unfortunately, there aren't as many youth as I'd love to see out there. But a lot of the people that I think have most inspired me have been more of the grassroots local heroes. So,
any special challenges in terms of your project reaching out to diverse communities? You have to speak, of course, not necessarily in the first person about experience like this, or I shouldn't take that for granted. But it is a classic dilemma. I think that sometimes people from communities of color, people who live in communities where they and their peers, their families feel unheard, have some special challenges. Are there ways that you're trying to overcome the barriers that someone from a diverse community faces?
You know, one of the reasons that we started Madison SOS is that within the high schools, there's an incredible level of diversity in Madison, really. And one of the things that frustrated me most as a student at West High School, and I hear this is true at other schools too, is just that I had so few opportunities to interact with girls of different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And when we started looking at the grassroots community neighborhood programs and programs in the schools that are meant to empower young women as community leaders, for better or for worse, a lot of those programs had girls interacting with the same girls that they see day in and day out. So one of the original goals of Madison SOS was to bring girls together to learn about community leadership, but in a different context than their day-to-day lives, and to interact with girls of different backgrounds. So one of the main successes, I think, of a program we did in 2007 called the Young Women's Leadership Forum was bringing together girls of different backgrounds who sometimes hadn't even interacted with before. And we saw that a lot in the program evaluations of girls saying how much they value that. And we actually did see there's a lot of research that shows, like the Dane County Youth Assessment, that I think it's something like 2/3 of youth, something around 60% in the Dane County area, really want more opportunities to interact with youth of different backgrounds. So that's one of our main priorities in all of the work.
So just to punctuate that, it's of course not just a value to the young woman of color who wants to get involved, but for everybody, it's a value because that's the way the world is put together, right?
Yeah.
I guess just to, again, get a sense of how this works in practice, Is it through workshops? Is it through mentoring? What ways do you take someone who has an interest in being a leader, but maybe just doesn't have a framework for doing that?
You know, we're a small grassroots group, and so we'd love to have a lot more strategies that we can actually put into practice.
Okay.
But in terms of what we've done so far, we've done a lot of different projects, and in each venue that we've worked, we've tried to bring girls of diverse backgrounds together. So one example that I can give you is last summer, we had been working on this project that we're still working on now with a survey called A Platform for Action. And that was meant to bring girls across the city together to share their insights on the issues affecting their lives, for us to be able to put those together, make some recommendations for community leaders and decision makers, and have that be sort of something sort of like a status report on those issues with our vision for change on six different issues. And we really wanted to make this platform for action and the ideas behind it, especially our vision of a community where girls are really valued community stakeholders, accessible to many more people than just might see this sort of report format, or might see it on our website. So we decided that we wanted to do a mural in the community to sort of have an artistic vision out there as well. So we did a mural on the southwest side of Madison at the Wisconsin Youth and Family Center, where we had girls from that community, but also girls from throughout the city who came together and did a community visioning project where they talked about the issues that most matter to them in their neighborhood, and we sort of combined that with issues that we were looking at the citywide level, and we were able to create a wonderful mural over the course of many weeks over the summer. And through that process, it was, I think, really, really important for us that the youth who were involved in that process ended up really shining a really great spotlight on the great things that youth are contributing to that neighborhood, because that on the southwest side last summer there, we saw in the media a lot of really negative attention towards especially youth. And I think there was a really strong perception that youth were the cause of a lot of problems in that neighborhood. And in September, we had a big celebration to unveil the mural, and we had over 100 community members there, and I felt like it was really exciting to have a really positive spotlight on what youth can contribute to a community and looking at youth in a really different light.
And of course, there probably was in talking about some of the things that happened on the southwest side, an ageist aspect of this, but also one is based on race, I think, sometimes. Mm-hmm. Too, sometimes they go hand in hand, that you want to blame somebody who you perceive to be different or the other. One last thing off of this, I guess, drawing on your own experiences and having had this opportunity to interact with the Madison School Board, working around the referendum, things like that, are you finding that folks in the school district are receptive to a group like yours that's trying to provide input on youth programs?
You know, I'm really, really grateful for all of the wonderful people within the school district who have been very receptive.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the school district, and I think very few, if any, school districts across the country are set up in a way that really values authentic youth engagement and is able to bring youth to the table before the agenda has already been determined. So in my personal experiences, I think there's a lot of room for change, but I'm also very hopeful because there's so many youth who are working really hard to make their voices heard. So.
Just out of curiosity, is part of the obstacle that you face maybe that a school board administrator or someone that you're dealing with is saying, you know, well, yeah, that's very interesting, but you know, you're going to be gone in 3 or 4 years, and so you know, we're around and we're the institution and we have all this decades of knowledge and other things, and we're going to be here. But I mean, do you get discounted just because being a young person, you're passing on to adulthood, and therefore maybe people aren't listening to you in the same way?
Yeah, I don't know if that's as much of a part of it. I know, for example, at West High School this last school year, Madison SOS and I individually was part of an effort through a group called Imagine a World Without Sexual Violence. Mm-hmm. To engage students in discussion around the issue of sexual harassment at school, which anecdotally we'd realized was a really big issue. And so we did a survey of over 500 students that were selected randomly, and we found that over 60% of them had directly experienced sexual harassment recently, and the percent that reported witnessing really awful kinds of sexual harassment in the school was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And so we tried working with school administrators on how can we look at school policies more differently, because there are policies out there that could be implemented to change the climate at school in terms of actually having some kind of punishment for people who do sexually harass students and that kind of thing. But it was really frustrating to see how even within the schools, there's a really long way that people have to go to get sort of a basic level of education about these issues, because so many school staff members, unfortunately, hardly are aware of issues like these. So I think one of the biggest issues is just getting people aware of the fact that these are issues affecting students in the schools, and you know, that's something that we should be working on. So,
and just a brief editorial. I told you, Natalia, I think some of your activism and the breadth of what you do reminds me so much of my niece Sol, who's 4 years older, but contemporary in a lot of ways. You remember around the Patriot Act, shortly after 9/11, student organizers got the city council to, and they worked with Madison Area Peace Coalition and other older adults. But in my mind, I think they were the catalyst for getting some effective legislation, is because they were so methodical. They had new approaches. They didn't have old grudges. They had, you know, they knew enough to talk to the police and not necessarily consider them the enemy from the get-go. They were strategic in ways that really surprised me. And so you know, and again, it's just for adults out there that think that somehow an extra burden or it's too much trouble to involve youth, there's just such a richness that can be brought to that. I mean, I'm sure you agree. Is that?
Oh, definitely. I think one of the challenges to youth engagement that's actually meaningful and effective is that oftentimes I think adults think it's a lot more work to get youth involved. But the reality is that we've seen in cities and states across the country that policies affecting youth that are made with youth involvement in them are so much more successful, because they have youth buy-in from the get-go, and they're actually a lot more realistic because they have youth at the decision-making table saying, well, yes, this will work. No, that won't work. So I think oftentimes youth aren't involved in really important decisions or, you know, in whatever conversations involving community power, because there's a really strong stereotype that youth are apathetic and they don't care. But of course, a big part of the reason why we don't see youth engaged and why we might think they're apathetic is that we don't have as many adults as we need telling youth your voices do matter. So it's sort of a yeah. two-way street of stereotypes and distrust, but it's really important to get youth at the table, because I think once they're there, in general, you have the potential for really successful.
My classic story is being at an ACLU biennial about 10 years ago, and there were a group of people gathered around, and they were remarking, "Oh gosh, you know, we found out that the median age of the people here is 72, and you know, and there's something wrong. We got to involve young people, but young people are so apathetic and they don't do." So that was that circle of six people, and around them were about 12 young people who were listening to this conversation. We're trying really hard to get in,
yeah.
but that's often what happens. You're the voice in the room that somehow just doesn't get heard. It's too bad. Amy, I want to just bring you into this. We've got just a couple minutes before the break, but we'll come back with more on Grassroots Leadership College after that. But just the intergenerational aspect of what you do is so powerful. I think very resonant with what Natalia's been talking about.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've been thinking about as y'all have been talking is the whole concept of a future leader.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that those of us who are no longer considered youth have a real tendency to talk about. You're a great future leader. And it really winds up being quite disempowering.
Yeah.
Because it completely forgets the fact that they're leading right now. They're out there speaking their truth and doing the work behind that. And I know from my own experience, I'm now 37. So I've gone through fairly recently the years of hearing that I was going to be, that I'm a future leader. And then all of a sudden that just kind of slides away and you don't hear it anymore. And you don't know when it was that you became a leader, because you didn't see any change there. You've been doing the same kind of leadership things as you were doing 20 years ago when they were saying you were a future leader. We have to recognize people as leaders right now and honor that pieces that they bring. There are a lot of things for young folks to learn. There's also a lot of things for old folks to learn.
Yeah.
And I think mentoring relationships can be really fabulous. And very, very helpful. I know a lot of my own elders that I've learned from it's been fabulous, but it's really making sure, I guess someone recently said to me that a good leader recognizes that they are the riverbed, that they're not always the river.
Yeah.
And got to be that riverbed to help other folks find their own leadership skills.
We had a guest on last week. His name is Gary Hollander, and he heads up an organization that's statewide called Diverse and Resilient. Works primarily with LGBT youth. But I put kind of the old truism past him, the notion that this next generation holds our hope and our dreams and all the other stuff. And he kind of cut me short, and he just said, the next generation doesn't need that burden. And the other part of, the implicit in what you're both saying, I think, too, is we need partnerships in the here and now. We don't need youth out there alone, but we need adults listening and taking seriously what youth have to say, vice versa. And so is that part of what you're getting at?
That's exactly it. Youth is an interesting construct. And I was just thinking that a couple of generations ago, Natalia, at her age, would have probably been married and had children. And would have been an adult just as anybody else in the society. But now we call her a youth. And she's still the same, her body, why she's the same person, mind, why she's the same person. But we've created this construct of youth, and we have to recognize that it's a created construct. And that these people still have the same kind of gifts to bring as they would have had we not created the idea of youth.
Absolutely. This is John Quinlan with Forward Forum. I'll be back with our guests Natalia Thompson from Madison SOS and Amy Mudlock from the Grassroots Leadership College in just a moment. And welcome back to Forward Forum. John Quinlan here with my guest Natalia Thompson from Madison SOS. That's Speak Out Sister. And also Amy Mudlock, the Executive Director of the Grassroots Leadership College. And talking about programs that that help to develop leadership among young people, among many other folks in the case of the Grassroots Leadership College. Actually, Amy, as we come back, one other aspect of what you all do is that you're part of a larger national movement. I know gotten an appreciation for that, and folks like Cy Khan, who's been a frequent guest on our show, come to town. But this is something that's occurring in all corners of the country. Is that right?
There are definitely different leadership programs going on in other places. One of the places that we got a lot of our inspiration from was the Highlander Center, which was, of course, a place where Dr. King learned his skills and where Rosa Parks learned and many of the other civil rights leaders. They very much operated from and continue to operate from a model very similar to ours, that seeing that everyone is a learner, teacher, and leader. Cy Khan is also doing great work down the southeast. I forget which state he's in.
North Carolina.
North Carolina, thank you. He's with Grassroots Leadership. There's the Southern Empowerment Project. There are many different organizations, particularly in the South, that are doing a lot of leadership development and organizing work. There's some very exciting work going on here in the Midwest with the Midwest Social Forum, again, getting organized. And there will be a state forum, I believe, this year. I'm not sure when exactly that's going to be. The next U.S. Social Forum is going to be happening in Detroit next year. And then the Midwest Social Forum will happen again after the year after that. So there's all sorts of different kinds of organizing work going on and leadership development work going on. I think the thing that makes the GLC really unique is that we really focus solely on doing the education piece. We're not doing organizing as an organization, but we are supporting a lot of different organizing efforts through all of our different participants. And we're also really unique because of that coach and leader model. So.
Off of that, for folks who are tuning in late, could you talk a little bit about the opportunities for someone who's been doing community organizing to give back to the community in terms of a mentor relationship?
Sure. Right now, we're accepting applications for developing leaders and coaches. We're accepting applications through August 3rd, and you can find those online at grassrootsleadershipcollege.org or by calling me at the office, 441-0085. Coaches are simply folks in the community who have experience working in the community in some sort of capacity, often volunteer capacity, and they are feeling like they're at a spot in their life where they can sit and listen to someone else and offer someone else support. So they're not necessarily, you know, high experts in some field. They're regular community folks who like to listen and like to support
others. Is it part of your challenge, convincing people that they have something to offer in those ways?
It definitely is. It definitely is. But one of the things that I find every semester is that I will have coaches who come through the program saying, wow, I think I learned more than my developing leader did, which is great. That really reflects that idea that we're all learners, teachers, and leaders. You don't have to be the one with the answers. You have to be the one who's able to ask the questions.
Okay. You know, I guess one thing off of what we were talking about with Amy, too, she's in talking about the Midwest Social Forum, some of the other groups where people go on. These are multi-issue, multi-racial, you know, not a singular focus in terms of their organizing. Is that a resonant theme with some of the things that Madison SOS does?
Yeah. The project that we're working right now, which I mentioned, is the Platform for Action. We're looking at six different issues, and it definitely is a multi-issue project where we're trying to represent a very diverse group of 3,800 teen girls in Madison. So those are the girls in Madison Public High Schools. So some of the issues that we're looking at include, as the overarching issue, young women being at the table in terms of community civic engagement. We're looking at mental health issues and physical well-being. We're looking at sexual health and reproductive health care. We're looking at a lot of other issues like racial justice in the schools, so LGBT issues, the list goes on. But what's really important to us throughout all of those issues is that they matter to teen girls. And, you know, that's why we're trying to organize around them, and that the work that we do around them gives girls an opportunity to speak out and share their views, whatever they might be. So we're not a partisan organization. We don't have a political platform. Our only platform or vision is that young women should be able to speak out on those issues that affect their lives.
And as you alluded to, of course, young women and teenage girls should have a voice in all of that. You have a survey that we mentioned. Could you bring that home again, please?
Yeah. Part of the work we're trying to do right now is to be able to go to policymakers and decision makers and tell them, these are the issues that girls care about. This is what they'd like you folks to work with us on doing. Again, going back to the idea of youth-adult community partnerships. And this is our vision for change on several of these issues. And we've had some really wonderful discussions and conversations in the community around some of these issues. But we've also seen that policymakers like statistics, they like numbers, they like facts. And so what we're trying to do is reach 380 girls, which is supposed to be a representative sample of those 3,800. To get some statistics that policymakers can use to better inform their policies. So we have a survey for girls to share their ideas and opinions and stories on some of the issues that I just mentioned. It's about 20 minutes. It's at tinyurl.com/SOS-survey. And girls who take it are eligible to enter a drawing for an iPod Touch. That's our incentive.
There you go.
And the idea with that is that there's already a lot of survey data, and girls are, I think, tired of taking surveys where they're asked things like, how many times you do X, Y, Z, and they're usually, you know, like risky behaviors, that kind of thing. But very rarely are girls asked, if you think, for example, that substance abuse is an issue among teen girls, what do you think we could do about it? And so this survey focuses entirely on girls' ideas about possible solutions to community issues, on their perceptions of community resources, on their experiences accessing community resources, you know, whether they've been successful, whether they felt like the resources are there to help them, and on their perceptions and experiences of working with adults in the community and whether they've able to have, you know, really meaningful partnerships with adults on working on these issues.
So. All right. Down to about our last minute and a half. I just want to make sure you each have a chance to tell people how to get in touch and if they'd like to get involved. And you mentioned, like a lot of us, you have a website that's probably in process of being updated, Natalia, but there is a Madison SOS website that'll be out there probably.
MadisonSOS.org by email, MadisonSOS@yahoo.com.
Okay. And how do folks get in touch with the Grassroots Leadership College?
Just go right to www.grassrootsleadershipcollege.org or give me a call at 441-0085. And definitely sign up for the fall semester and come and hula hoop with us on September 13th in Mazomanie. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. Again, we really appreciate you both being here today and a fascinating discussion. Natalia Thompson is with Madison SOS and Amy Munlock with the Grassroots Leadership Conference. Thanks for being here in Forward Forum.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, please visit our website, forwardforumexchange.blogspot.com. We have links up there to both organizations, ways to get in touch with both that survey, Amy's special event, the massive hula hoop contest, and also how to become a volunteer mentor there. We have some great shows coming up later in the summer. We are going to try to take account of this week's events and talk about the importance of Walter Cronkite, some other folks we've lost recently. Lots of interesting discussions about community events. This is Forward Forum. We will see you next week.